Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to the Money Show this Friday night on a day where the JSE hit 51,000. US jobs numbers were atrocious. We'll talk to Richard de Villiers, Global Wealth Manager at UBS Financial Services in the United States this evening. Find out what it's like to be a South African in New York at the moment. Plus, how that is playing out in terms of the economy. Also, in a moment, Dambisa Moyo, she is an economist, she is an author, a long-time critic of aid to Africa. But in The Economist this week, she has written a compelling argument as to why it is time to change that view. We'll hear from her in a bit. Gary McNamara from Sunland Private Wealth is our market commentator, bring you some of the best bits of The Money Show before we wrap up for the week this Friday night.
Bruce Whitfield on 702. Call Bruce on 011-883-0702.
Well, I can't believe that just 4 months ago I was sitting no more than 5 meters from Dambisa Moyo as she and the historian Neil Ferguson and Martin Wolf of the FT were talking about the state of the global economy in Davos. The world was beginning to hear rumblings of a new virus back then, but it wasn't until mid-February that we realized the seriousness and the pandemic nature of what was going on. And the global economy after that was quickly plunged into the worst crisis of our lifetimes. Dambisa Moyo has long been a critic of aid for developing markets, particularly Africa. She was born in Zambia. But this week in The Economist, she tells why she's changed her mind, why the world needs urgently to step in and to help Africa, not by throwing billions of dollars at governments, by helping individual citizens directly. Dambisa Moyo on the line to us this evening. Where are you in the world, Dambisa?
I'm in the U.S. actually at the moment. I was actually just in South Africa over Christmas and the New Year period. So, and then obviously subsequently, as you mentioned, in Davos at the World Economic Forum. But yes, you're absolutely right. A lot has changed in just a few months.
Yeah, and you've had a Damascene moment in terms of aid. It illustrates very clearly how seriously you see this crisis and the potential devastation for African economies, that you are saying, hold on a second, there is an argument now to be made for aid, but not in the old-fashioned way.
Well, I think if you read the article, I'm very clear that I've not sort of departed from the fundamental view that I think that open-ended aid flows in perpetuity are not going to deliver the sort of sustained economic growth that I strongly believe we need in order to meaningfully transform living standards. What I am arguing in the piece is that much like humanitarian aid, which is what I think effectively I'm arguing for in this piece, I've always, in page 6 of my book, Dead Aid, I talk specifically about how I was never a critic of humanitarian aid. And I think there's very compelling reasons, not just in terms of the healthcare agenda that we're dealing with right now, but you know, beyond that, the geopolitical dynamics that could fall out of this, and as to why I think we do need to think of a sort of a Marshall Plan for Africa. So it's a slightly different, more nuanced argument. It's not about saying we need additional money just to continue the sort of aid programs that I don't believe work on a structural basis. This is an argument for an intervention to help address the healthcare challenge that we're dealing in the immediacy, but also to put a plug on some of the more structural economic challenges that will be a fallout of this pandemic.
And your opposition to aid is well aired. I mean, it fueled corruption, it fosters dependence, it creates economic malaises, which is why you want this idea of direct payments. What is the benefit of going directly to individuals rather than throwing buckets of money into the bottomless pit of governments?
Well, I think, first of all, it depends on what you're trying to solve for. I think that there's a lot of examples, whether it's microfinance, the types of BRAC and Grameen that we've seen around, but also Kiva in the United States, essentially taking advantage of innovation and thinking about new ideas to try and figure out how we can deliver some form of a capital injection to people who are trying to build businesses, who are trying to improve their livelihoods. So I mentioned in the article in The Economist magazine that this idea of helicopter money is something that is being used in the United States, for instance, and also in places like Hong Kong. But beyond that, I think that the fact that multiple billions of dollars is already sent via remittances from people in the diaspora like myself to home, I think that we need to be a bit more innovative. I mean, we're in the 21st century. We can't just be using use the same old techniques of trying to jumpstart and support economies that we've done over the past 6 years. It seems to me we should take advantage of innovation and new thinking to improve our outcomes.
Why should the rich world, which are dealing with pandemics of their own, they've got crises of their own. The United States, where you're sitting, has got a massive health crisis. We saw today's unemployment numbers in the United States. They were horrific. Why should rich countries help Africa when they've got enough problems of their own?
Bruce, it's a great question, because the impetus for my book, Dead Aid, 10 years ago was to say, listen, there was always going to be a day that would come where these donors would be so cash strapped and themselves dealing with massive debts and deficits and really low growth, high unemployment, that they would not be able to make an economic or even political case to continue to support Africa, but other emerging markets as well, on an open-ended basis. And really, that was why my book was a rallying call for African governments to take more responsibility for their budgets and for management of their economies. Obviously, I think we've landed in a place that I was hoping would never happen. But to your specific question, why should they? What is the argument? And I think there's a bigger geopolitical debate going on between the U.S. and China. We're seeing that very live in real time right now. And I think that, on the one hand, ideological debate is pitting liberal democracy, market capitalism from the West against state capitalism and deprioritizing democracy, sort of led by China. And that if the West wants to be a player, as they have in the past, whether it's through Bretton Woods or through the Monroe Doctrine, if they want to be a competitor as a global leader and setting the global agenda, then they have to understand that Africa is a key part of that puzzle, and they do need to remain engaged. And so that was really the piece that I think is an argument for why the West should be involved.
I mean, as much as there's a moral argument and there is a responsibility, that's one part of it. You talk also about the risk, of course, of mass migration. And we've seen the migrations that have come out of Syria and parts of North Africa into Europe and the crises that fomented as well. And then, of course, there is the influence argument, which you've just told us about. This is as much about their self-preservation as it is about the assistance of the African continent as well.
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And, I'm going to go out on a limb. I know this is an argument that's been made multiple times, but, people tend to not put pieces of the story together. So, there's a very sort of well-trodden argument that the fact that the West went into Syria in the first place led to the flood of immigration into Europe. And the consequences of that, which we are living through now, is the peeling off of the European Union. I mean, through Brexit and ostensibly, we've seen it through this crisis, resistance of Germany in particular to support Italy and other countries in the pandemic. But it could be the beginning of the end of the EU. So, these types of decisions, they're not ring-fenced. So when you think about immigration in a disorderly fashion, from North Africa, from the Middle East, because of a lack of action around the pandemic and really continued lack of proper support for African economies, the consequences of that are very, very high risk, potentially very disruptive for Western society itself.
Have you had any feedback from the power brokers with whom you do rub shoulders around the world?
I don't know who those power brokers are. I mean, I've gotten a lot of feedback. I think that you know, people love to do the, well, we told you so kind of thing. And I don't think people are really reading the article. they read the headline and they don't really understand the nuance around the argument. Perhaps they didn't even really understand the nuance originally when I made the argument in Dead Aid and 10 years ago. But yes, I mean, I think this is an issue. And it's to the point that you just raised. We are asking for support, not just across Africa, but around the emerging world at precisely a time when the economics and political backdrop of the pandemic in the Western world is very anti-globalization, and I would say very anti any form of engagement beyond nationalist borders. So it's not a good time to be asking, but, you know, hopefully I've done my part to make the case from a moral standpoint, from a healthcare standpoint, but also from an economic standpoint.
I hope to see you in Davos next year. I don't know if we will, because the world may not have opened up by then. But Bisa Moyo, thank you very much for joining us this evening on The Money Show. She is an economist. She's an author. She wrote the book Dead Aid. It was provocative at the time. It remains provocative today. And now she's saying she hasn't changed her mind on aid. That's not the point. She still doesn't think that the most efficient way of providing assistance is through governments, because it comes with lots of consequences. But a Marshall Plan type solution in the interests of global powers themselves, if that's the only reason they do it, they may end up doing it and saving many, many lives and livelihoods on the African continent.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Well, staying in New York this evening, because that's how we roll here on The Money Show. Richard de Villiers, Global Wealth Manager at UBS International. Horrible jobs numbers today. Richard de Villiers in the United States. I mean, Dabisa Moyo in New York. What's it like as a South African in New York at the moment, which has got one of the most horrendous experiences of COVID-19?
Yeah, Bruce, good evening, and thanks for having me on your show, and good evening to your listeners. To your point, New York has been horrendous, and it has been really, really depressing. The New York of old, of the glitz and the glamour, has completely gone away. The streets are completely empty. People are wearing face masks, avoiding each other at all costs. There is some interesting data coming back today about how it's starting to slowly improve and slowly starting to get better. More cars, more occupancy in the subway, and things like that, but It's a city that's changed, and it's a city that's it seems really, really beaten down. There is a lot of talk about it recovering, and the recovery will be stronger, and we are New York strong is the narrative that is going around. As a South African, we have quite a good community here. There are a few of us that are involved in some quite important positions, and we keep discussing and keep checking in. A lot of us have fled and moved across the states into more safer areas, but missing the old New York of old, for sure.
Whereabouts are you? Are you in New York at the moment, or have you sort of moved to more open spaces?
Yeah, Bruce, I'm very fortunate. My wife is from Ohio, about an hour south of Cleveland, where we have about 10, 15 acres to run around, and I've got a young child who's able to run around and enjoy the outside world and not be cooped up in a 50 square meter apartment in New York.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're fortunate then as well in Ohio. Lots of big open space and big sky country, so that's great. Okay, Richard, now give me a perspective, please, on the state of the real U.S. economy, which is shedding jobs by the tens of millions. I mean, when one looks at the U.S. jobs numbers, going the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years to the highest in around 80 years, and that happened in 8 weeks. It's just the most astonishing sort of almost like pressure cooker effect.
Yeah, Bruce, it is astonishing. It's an eye-watering report which I've read this morning. Harshest downturn for U.S. workers in history. About 20.5 million jobs cut in April. This unemployment figure raises roughly all the jobs added in the past decade. To make things worse, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, the figure should be closer to 20%. The Labor Department reporting that, you know, workers incorrectly classified themselves as absent from work, as still employed but absent from work, the furloughed workers, and this accounts for about 4 in every 5 unemployed Americans. vast majority of the unemployment concentrated in sectors like restaurants, hospitality, yeah. and leisure. Losses across the board, though, and interestingly, in healthcare, there's also losses there in the unemployment thing, as elective procedures have obviously vanished. The big question now is how fast will hiring resume? This will be critical to the strength of the recovery. You know, with social distancing in place and other enforcement, a V-shaped so-called recovery is unlikely. You know, modeling looks like a 32 to 35% drop in GDP numbers for the quarter. And post-corona, it's going to be a completely different economy, and we expect the economy to, you know, the things that contribute to the economy aren't going to be the drivers of old.
And that is it. And again, I think we'd be speculating if we tried to guess what the new economy would look like. Certainly, it plays interestingly into American politics because we are headed to a U.S. election in November. We've got Mr. Biden sitting in his basement trying to campaign. We've got Donald Trump campaigning at every opportunity that he's presented as cameras come to him in the White House. It's not really an even battle. But I mean, the American history shows that no sitting U.S. president has ever been re-elected, and Donald Trump could, of course, be somebody who breaks that tradition, but in a rising unemployment environment. I mean, the stakes are pretty high right now.
Stakes are very high.
And we're losing. Richard, we've lost Richard. But interesting, Richard, we'll get you back. Thank you very much. Richard de Villiers this evening from Idaho. He left New York and went to go find some open space. We'll catch up with Richard de Villiers one of these days. But yeah, good to get a perspective from him in this extraordinary environment, this sort of this environment in which he is living and operating at the moment in the United States, a South African trying to make things work out in the U.S. at the moment.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Gary McNamara from Sundown Private Wealth. Tell us what's happened on the home markets. I mean, you get this jobs number, you get all of this negative data, you get all of this bad news. And yesterday, the JSE goes to 50,000. Today, the rand strengthens a bit and commodity prices go up and the JSE promptly goes to 51,000. It's like there is no crisis at all. It would be helpful if I put Gary McNamara, of course, on the radio. I don't usually have to do this, Gary, you see, but now I am. I have to be self-sufficient. It's like there's no crisis at all.
No, exactly, Bruce. And I guess it's what expectations are. So you start with the jobless numbers in the States, which everybody is waiting for today, and the expectations were for 22 million jobs lost during April, and it came in at 20,500,000. So the market liked that. And it was better than expected, and the hours worked was better than expected. So the market took heed from that and rallied quite strongly. But a word of caution is that the volumes, certainly in our market, are reasonably light. Today was about 18 billion, so certainly off from long-term numbers. And I think there is an element of uncertainty about this recovery as it stands at the moment. But certainly today, very much driven by the jobless numbers that came out better than expected, but that number is still massive. Gets 14% unemployment in the States, which is big. It's a big number. We would like that number, but it's big. That could, obviously, if we get some sort of recovery quite quickly, which looks unlikely at this stage, a lot of those people will be re-employed. They've got that type of flexible labor force. But short answer, yeah, that's what's driving the numbers today on the market.
We ended up 1,000 points or 987 points or whatever it was back above that 51,000 level in an economic environment, which, you know, there's a huge amount of frustration from the corporate sector that people are not able to get back to work to the extent their business would like, that we're not seeing the taxes that the government, the country needs being collected. We're not seeing government sort of think, at least not openly, about the state of the economy. And that's leading to massive concern.
Absolutely, Bruce, and I think a lot of it's to do with governments stepping in to support this so-called lockdown globally, and it's a flush of money into the system that needs to find a home, and yields are very low, and they're finding their way into equity markets, but there is a massive concern with corporates with the slow release of the lockdown, and it's a very difficult position to be in because you certainly don't want to be responsible for people's death. But at some stage, we've got to get up and running because the consequences could be more severe than COVID-19. So that's really where the government is at the moment. I personally don't think we're going to stay at this level for too long, a level four. I think we're going to be lower, but that's an estimate or a guess at this stage. But I just think the government cannot afford this lockdown to continue for too long. But in the meantime, as you say, the markets are really flush with money because the government has pumped money into the system. But the problem longer term is tax collection is going to be significantly down as income hasn't been there, and you do get this consumer spiral with people being retrenched, particularly in the airline industry, the hospitality industry, and that does lead to a virtual spiral of consumer confidence that is going to be quite weak, and the governments globally and in South Africa as well are stepping in to try and support that money supply. But it will time will tell whether they've done enough. And the market is certainly taking heed that there's going to be some sort of recovery in the second half of this year. But as you said earlier, I think it's a guess at best. Mm. The markets are forward-looking animals, and they are certainly looking more positive.
Just this week, I mean, Comair suspended from trade on the JSE and going into business rescue. Magazines have failed. We've spoken about this a lot. Today, we see Pumalela suspended from trade, and they're talking about business rescue and parts of their business. Adcor profits have halved, and that's not surprising. Of course, they're in the staffing industry, but they're warning their profits are halving. And when profits collapse, tax collections collapse. When profits collapse, companies cut back on expenditure, they cut back on expansion plans, they cut back on ambition, they cut back on people. When people lose their jobs, they're not making money to pay PAYE either. And then it's like, you know, somebody switched off the water tap or the oxygen supply into the economy.
Absolutely. And you get, as I say, the virtual spiral of lack of consumer spending, corporates trying to cut back. And I think governments need to support to keep it going, but I think they've got to support more than just cash. I think they've got to find a more sustainable way to allow the economy to operate, because at the moment it's not working. And just coming back to your previous question, I think you've got to be very careful of industry, the airline industry, obviously in particular hospitality, that are very, very affected by people with lockdown. And I don't think those industries are going to be opening up anytime soon. The airlines are probably going to be almost the last industry to come into recovery. And there are other industries that are less susceptible to essential services. Those industries are probably less hit. Your financial services are still operating. Those that can operate remotely, but the ones you mentioned earlier, Comair, Comalela, are really at the high risk end of the market, and the consumers just are fresh out of money at the moment, and that spiral is a big risk to ourselves and the global economy at the moment, because as you say, there's no money in the system and governments are going to have very low tax collections.
Gary McNamara, thank you, from Sanlam Private Wealth. Well, I mean, talking about those tax collections, and it's a deep concern, of course. I got a message today from property lawyer Julian Scher. He was asking why the deeds office remains closed. He's really struggling to get any kind of response. He was under the impression that under stage four lockdown, the deeds office was supposed to be opening up and that we were supposed to see property transactions processed. And this is, from his perspective, it's not just, you know, your house, and that's, you know, that's important. Obviously, it is important to you, and it's important to the fiscus that any taxes that are due on that property get paid. He's talking about massive developments where hundreds of millions of rands worth of VAT and transfer duties are due, but they're locked up in a system, and they can't, that money can't be transferred until the property transfer happens. And so these property transfers have been sitting in the deeds office for weeks and weeks and weeks, and all it needs is the deeds office official to come in, open it up and go, yes, 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 that's absolutely fine. Do the transfer of the properties. And at that point, massive cash transfers, hundreds of millions of rand, could find their way into the fiscus. Have a listen to what Julian Scher said to me a little earlier.
Hi, Bruce. I wonder if you could assist me with something. Despite the regulations saying that the deeds offices could open from the 1st of May, they have not yet opened. And the correspondence we're getting on the feedback from the deeds office doesn't give us any firm date or any commitment as to when they are going to open. It's very concerning because it's holding up a hell of a lot of property transactions and ultimately a lot of tax collection for the fiscus. It'd be great if you could assist me with this.
I tell you what I would do, Julian. I'm going to make sure that Edward Kiesveta gets that message. I mean, if he's got any leverage at all, he can use that leverage through National Treasury. National Treasury can lean on the deeds office and say, oi! Unlock the computers, go control or delete, fire up the computers. Let's get this easy money that is sitting, waiting to be collected, collected.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking. The bravery to shine a light and the strength to keep going during this crisis. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
You know when your colleagues can't look you in the eye? You know when you feel like there is something very strange going on, where you feel like they're plotting against you? It's just, I don't want to be paranoid about this. I don't want to be angstlich about it. I don't want to be sort of like beginning to mistrust my colleagues. But there's just something very, very strange happening today. So coming up on the next Money Show.
I'm Nicola Klein, Dean and Professor at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. And on your next Money Show, I'll be hijacking Bruce to interview him on his new book, The Upside of Down, in the regular Monday book feature. Join me as I grill him, like he likes to grill others, on his brand new and first ever book about how chaos and uncertainty breed opportunity in South Africa. All this and a bit more of Bruce on your next Money Show.
I knew they were up to no good. I knew there was a plot. There was a plot. Now I know how Thabo Mbeki felt all those years. there was a plot. Oh, Nicola Klein. Good luck to Nicola. She's got hold of the book. She's going to be reading it over the weekend. I hope she still makes it on Monday. Because if she doesn't, you know, she thinks it's awful. And then I'm going to have to be on my best behavior with the professor. As she sits down with I don't know, one of those big, but professors have big sticks. I don't know. Maybe, I think nowadays they have carrots. And she's going to crit the book. Big stuff.
Bruce Whitfield on 702. Call Bruce on 011-883-0702.
Well, time for best bits of the Money Show from the week that has been. And the Trade and Industry Minister, and I think he's now called Trade, Industry and Competition. Maybe that's too many portfolios for one person. Maybe more people share portfolios. Is that not anti-competitive in itself, I wonder? But the Trade and Ministry Minister, Ibrahim Patel, is under fire for his lockdown regulation, seen by many in the industry and business as completely irrational. And he suggested that economists thumbsuck their projections. And he was also very dismissive of internet shopping and saying that it would be unfair. Unfettered e-commerce would be unfair on people who do physical retail and spas are shops, so therefore unfettered e-commerce could not be allowed. And in doing so, he significantly prejudiced you and your ability to get stuff delivered to you, insisting rather than you go out and go and expose yourself to the lurgies that are around. It's an insane, insane ruling. And Busisiwe Mavuso agrees. Chief Executive of Business Leadership South Africa says he's trivializing. She says that Ibrahim Patel is trivializing the crisis in business.
And I think we are just forgetting the small, tiny details that while we were, you know, going through this crisis, we have also been hit, you know, with the double whammy of being relegated to junk status. Now, you know, as if our situation was not bad before, Bruce, this, you know, being relegated to junk status even makes it worse. And which is precisely the reason why we should actually be even on higher alert as a country. So any job that is being lost, we were actually jumping up and down about the 30% unemployment before we actually entered the lockdown, you know, which meant that there were more people that were unemployed than those that were employed in all the provinces except Gauteng and the Western Cape. Now the numbers are saying that we could actually be moving to north of 50%. That is actually a scary number. It's a scary number because if you understand how the economic world turns. It turns because there's consumer confidence. It turns because people have got disposable income to can actually go into shops to buy goods and services, you know, and that is how you actually circulate the income in the economy. So in the absence of that, in the absence of people not having jobs, it means they don't have disposable income. It means they are not spending. It means there is less on tax revenue. It means there is less, you know, business confidence is reduced. It means that the production levels are less. Production levels are less. Businesses are going to have to lay off more people. It is just a terrible cycle that is actually going to be started off. So we should actually be looking at, you know, what is it that we actually need to do to ensure that we soften the blow on the economy. And I'm worried that it's
the
government already. Therefore, the interventions that we're actually going to be putting in place in phase three are actually going to be a hit and miss. And we can't afford that because, unfortunately, if we are not careful, South Africa is going to be sitting with a collapsed economy.
She didn't even flinch, did she? She got interrupted, didn't flinch. She's focused. Busisiwe Mabuso, the chief executive of Business Leadership South Africa, on The Money Show earlier this week. And she's absolutely right, because the SARS Commissioner, Edward Kiesvetter, was talking to us earlier this week as well about the massive shortfalls that they are seeing in revenues coming to the state. And just in April, they lost revenues of 285 billion rand. That's just the first month of the lockdown. For every month that extends, of course, that number gets amplified and will worsen over time. And stage four lockdown does very little to address the quantum of the losses that the state is seeing in terms of its losses in terms of corporates, and corporates are not producing profits. We're not seeing individuals paying as much PAYE because people are losing their jobs. We're not seeing the VAT collections. We're not seeing the excise duties on cigarettes and tobacco. And there are lots of own goals being scored. And I asked Edward Kiesvetter whether or not government had a firm grip on reality when it came to the economy.
I don't think there's oblivion, Bruce. I think there are various levels of comprehension of what's really happening. I have never, however, seen cabinet and government as focused as they are now. So in that respect, COVID focused the mind. But it's going to take all of us to be on a very, very fast learning curve. One, to fully understand the impact in the short and the long term, as I said, to economic capability. Two, we haven't even begun to factor in all of the psychosocial damage that we are doing to our society. But more importantly, it provides us with an opportunity to address those stubborn inequalities that have just not gone away in more than two decades of our democracy. And I have seen a resolve more than ever before of government to address that. Obviously, the trick, as you and I know, is that every great idea, every good business case still has to be executed. And I think that's where our big challenge lies. Can we execute the plans that we have made? I give you a sense. In SARS, we have had Vision 2024, which was to build a smart, modern SARS with unquestionable integrity. Well, that has all of a sudden become Vision 2020, because COVID has just said to us, you don't have 5 years to do this. So what we have done in the last 6 weeks, we've stepped up our investment and our activities in terms of data management, artificial intelligence, and the use of technology to ensure more of our taxpayers can engage with us online. And we'll step up that work. We'll fast-track the evolution of our staffing model to make sure more of our people can enter into the future world of work. So COVID-19 has presented us with a great crisis moment to accelerate the transformation of SARS.
Never waste a good crisis. Edward Kiesvetter taking that one to heart. Edward Kiesvetter, the SARS Commissioner, on The Money Show this week, really painting a bleak picture of the way in which South Africa's economy is bleeding at the moment. We had a massively successful author on the show this week. Lauren Bierkus is renowned in 24 countries. She's got bestsellers in many of those jurisdictions. She was our Make Money Monday special edition guest, the award-winning, internationally acclaimed, best-selling South African author of a number of books, including The Shining Girls, Zoo City, and more recently Afterland, lots of other works as well. And she's just got a huge diverse portfolio of activities that she's involved in. And with somebody with a short attention span, she told us, she's actually got quite a good head on her shoulders when it comes to money.
So I often have interesting thoughts as I'm going to sleep, and I use the voice recorder on my cell phone to like leave myself a voice note. Which sometimes is like complete scramble. I'm like, what?
That sort of speaking, yes. I know it well.
Yes, absolutely. But I, you know, I'll jot stuff down. I'll make notes during the day if I'm busy with something else. And again, it's just kind of like cleaning out the time. I think Elizabeth Gilbert has a really wonderful TED talk. And of course, she's the author of Eat, Pray, Love, which I haven't read and I'm not going to read because it's not my thing. But her TED talk is about you can't wait for the muse to show up. You have to sit down and do the hard work. And like a Capetonian to a dinner party, if you're sitting there and doing the thing, eventually the muse will show up and help you. But you've got to do the work first.
Do authors have retirement annuities, or do you believe that your juices will flow forever and you will never retire? So therefore, you're not going to need an income because the books will just keep on delivering. You can spend all your money as you please.
No, I'm very careful with my money. I do have retirement annuities. I do have a share portfolio. I haven't looked at it. I don't want to look at it.
No, don't.
You know, I've got some money. No, no. I've got some money, like a tiny percentage of my money in cryptocurrency and my house, which I've just sold. But, you know, I treat every book deal as if it's going to be my last. And I have met authors who got the six-figure, like $500,000 book deal and tanked so horribly. And now I've had to change their name so that they can try and write under a different name and try and get into bookstores. So I'm very careful. I'm very cautious. I assume the worst.
She's so sensible. It is Lauren Beerkes. She is the author of many globally renowned bestsellers. Remarkably successful South African author. This week's Make Money Mondays special edition guest, wrapping up this week's edition of some of just the best bits. You can find more best bits and the full interviews of those extracts, if you missed them, on our website. You can find them wherever you get your podcasts from. Podcasts are, everybody knows how podcasts work in our days, and they are there. They're free for you to download at your leisure, and there's also a share button. Please feel free to share some of your favorites with friends and family. They need things to do. They need amusement, entertainment, information, and most of all, hope.